Mustafa and I and Steve Francis have just finished, well, we finished it last January, but things take some time, a book for the public on how to prevent bites and stings, also venomous insects. And that was an occasion to review a lot of what the consumer comes up against in terms of products. And I think for a repellent-oriented group, we all know that a repellent that stays in the bottle is no good. It's not providing any protection at all. It has to be have application characteristics that people can accept for the situation that they're in, and it has to be at a cost that people can buy it and use it. So one of the conundrums, I think, for repellent development is that were we to have a magic active ingredient, a magic formulation that work perfectly, and what would perfect be? And I'd propose something, actually this was suggested to me by Jeff Aldridge, something like deodorant, something you could, that you put on every day anyway and nothing bites you. That would be an amazing product, something that we're technically far from having. But what if that product cost $25, you know? What if it cost $25 for 2 weeks worth or for a month's worth? You know, much more than deodorant. Would the public accept that, even though their quality of life was so much improved? And of course the answer is those who could afford it and had the need would buy it, and those who couldn't wouldn't. But I think that getting that balance right in terms of development is really very, very important. And it's a big discouragement to industry that the market for repellents is so relatively small to other consumer products. And part of the reason for that is because the public has in their mind that repellents should be very, very cheap. And we have commercial people here who I'm sure would love to change that perception. So if we look at the cost of repellents, this is pretty simple-minded stuff. You can give example products for different active ingredients in different formats. And there are two kind. And to make these tables, I simply looked up the retail cost, which no doubt someone would scream about that it's the wrong cost. And the hours of protection, wherever possible, I took from the label claims themselves. And where the labels did not claim hours of protection, I took it from literature sources for that percentage active ingredient. So I feel pretty good about the hours of protection. I think those are actually fairly realistic for those products, especially against mosquitoes. So the 25% aerosol, and I didn't put any names of companies or products, but you can probably fill in the blanks. Those of you who are real repellent people will know immediately what these are. The 25% aerosol, for instance, you can hope for about 6 hours of protection with a good application. And the cost per application in order to put 5 grams on yourself, in other words, to cover your forearms and your face and your lower legs, is 14 cents. So it's pretty cheap. And that translates to 2.2 cents per hour of protection. So that's the basic reasoning behind these tables I'm going to present. And you can see that the price varies a lot, actually a whole lot, so that the 100% DEET, which I've heard recommended, and I've recommended it myself, as a very convenient package because you've got a lot of active ingredient in a small package. It's all the products I know of are not aerosolized, so you don't have problems with pressurization, etc. And it's just kind of a neat thing to be carrying around 100% DEET. But actually, it's very expensive to use it. And the cost, even the cost per application, is quite high. The other thing about these contrasts in this table is that the cost per application can be a lot different from the cost per hour. For instance, this one, the new liposome product, which is, I don't know, how many of you have tried that, the new liposome product, REI 30? One person? Two people? Well, you need to take your $10 out of your wallet from your per diem and run over to REI and buy a bottle of this stuff, because it's an amazing product that goes on like a cosmetic, actually acts as an emollient, and lasts as long as the current winter, the military repellent, which goes on like toothpaste. So it's really a wonderful, wonderful product, and it's high tech in the sense no one else has done this format before. And of course, it wasn't easy to get 30% DEET to stay in a liposome stably on the shelf. So a lot of technology went into it. But it's quite expensive per application, 46 cents. But on the other hand, per hour of protection, it's not so bad, 3.8 cents. So for the consumer, it depends on what the person's doing. If they're only going to be out for a couple hours in the evening when there are a lot of Culex out, or Culicita in California, right as the sun goes down, they don't need more than a couple hours protection. And it's sort of a waste to put on a product with 12 hours of protection when they only need two. So that's another piece of advice to give people. I guess finally about this one is the towelettes, as you might expect, are quite expensive to use. You're getting convenience. Now, picaridin, there aren't as many formats in U.S. registered products. It comes in either 5, 10, or 20% products right now. And it's a similar range of prices, but a pretty high cost per application on the 20% aerosol, which is a good product. But if you want a cheaper product, you would go with DEET. IR3535 is, in my opinion, a very underutilized active ingredient in the United States. There are just, I think, just two products that use it, two product lines. And at 20%, it gives protection that's very similar to DEET. If you look in the literature, it's just a little bit less, maybe 10% less in terms of duration. But from a practical standpoint, it's an excellent repellent, and its big selling point is that it has virtually no odor, and it has not just a good health record, but a perfect health record. There has never been an adverse effect from IR3535 in about 25 years of use. So that's really something to crow about. And you can see that it actually, in cost per hour, it's pretty cheap to use. The 20% aerosol is another cosmetically driven product that's very, very easy to put on. Once it dries, it's difficult to tell it's on the skin. And again, in my opinion, it's an excellent repellent to recommend to people who are worried about smells and health effects and are fussy about how their skin feels, that sort of thing. People who want to use a repellent around their house on a regular basis. Now, the botanicals, as you know, there are many, 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 many different botanical products, and they use about 47 different plant extracts in the United States. It's just a dizzying array of active ingredients, and you can pick up the same bottle of stuff with the same name, and it'll have different things in it 6 months, a year later. So the plant extract business, the botanical repellent business, has a long, long way to go in terms of standardization and providing products that the public can expect to perform in a certain way. And just as one horror story, there's one on the market that's not registered by EPA that has pennyroyal in it, which, as you know, is a straight-out toxicant and not a bad insecticide, but very dangerous to use on the skin and abortifacient and terrible stuff, and yet this is marketed. You can pick up a bottle of pennyroyal containing repellent right now. So that's how chaotic the botanical market is. And another thing about the botanical market is that it doesn't talk very closely to the fragrance industry about standards on concentration. So very many of the botanical products have concentrations of active ingredients which exceed the threshold for inducement of sensitivity. And the fragrance industry is very worried about that, because if sensitivity is induced by a bad product, then one of their good products with a small amount of that active ingredient might irritate the skin of somebody. So even though many of these products are safe to eat, they aren't actually safe to put on your skin over a long period of time. So that's another huge problem with botanicals. Now, all that, but that said, there are some good botanical products out there, especially for short-term duration. But as many of you know, when paramethane diol, PMD, came out originally from a Chinese discovery, that not lemon eucalyptus oil, which is a standard product, it's got a CAS number and all that, not the oil, which it's usually advertised as, but actually the aqueous product that's left behind after you extract the oil. That aqueous product is about 56% PMD, and it's an excellent repellent, originally called Qian Ling I'm probably mispronouncing that, in China. And so there are products that still contain what is basically Qian Ling, and obviously it varies with the batch of plants, and it takes a lot of quality control to make that product. But I believe the one on the U.S. market is well controlled, and it's a good product, but it smells strongly of eucalyptus. Anyway, it's almost 26% PMD, pretty high concentration, fairly expensive, but not hugely so. The other product with PMD, which was used as synthetic PMD, and in my opinion was a superior product, is now off the market for marketing reasons. It did not sell well enough to maintain its production by its single manufacturer. So PMD has a lot of promise, but again, there's a little caution there in that, in fact, it's a lot more irritating, especially to the eyes, than other common active ingredients, than the synthetics. For instance, if you get that 26% PMD in your eye, there is a chance of permanent damage to your eye. Unlike DEET, where it's going to hurt, but there's not really any chance of permanent damage. The final mixture of PMD, and that's synthetic PMD, and 5% lemongrass oil, which actually is a little above that threshold for safety against sensitivity, is a product that's not registered yet, may never be registered, called Nomas, put out by a man, Sam Darling, who's on a mission to try to provide a cheap repellent, effective repellent, for malaria and dengue control in areas where people can't afford a very high price. So he specifically designed a product which was cheap and also effective. And he's done a very good job of documenting efficacy, an amazingly good job of documenting efficacy with some of the best people in the field doing it. And actually, some of the best methods I've seen for field evaluations of a repellent. And so that's a very solid protection time, and maybe a bit of an underestimate. Works good against anopheles. It probably does everything that he hoped it would. And the price is amazing. You can see, comparing it to those previous prices, it's about a tenth of the next cheapest repellent. So it is possible to produce a very cheap repellent, which, depending on whether you're trying to save the world, is a great thing for the consumer, or if you're trying to preserve your market, your profit margin, it's a great thing for a manufacturer.
Okay, let me interrupt, please. Please, we have a lot of seats up here. You can come on. You don't have to stand outside the room. You can come on. Come in here, please.
Oh, yes, okay.
Thank you. Just come on in and sit down. There's a lot of seats. Go.
I was going to say, but don't sit in my chair, but somebody already did. So.
You got a chair right there.
That's fine.
You can still come on in and sit down, please.
So, if you want to give people advice on price, here are some conclusions. You can probably think of better ones, but for people who are in the advice business, who pick up the phone and one of the Joes is on the line asking a question, then if they're talking about short-term use, as I mentioned, barbecues in the evening, running out to do a garden chore when there are a lot of Asian tiger mosquitoes around, I mean, in 5 minutes you can get 10 or 20 bites and it's really pretty intolerable, then price per application is what they should be looking for. On the other hand, if it's long-term use, like they're going hiking, or they're going to be camping, they're going to be outdoors long periods, they're a soldier, then price per hour makes a lot more sense than price per application. And then, as I mentioned, price doesn't matter if the repellent isn't used. So it makes sense to think about application characteristics for that use. For instance, DEET, which has a distinct odor, which people don't seek usually, in a camping situation or a hiking situation, I think people often think that's not so bad. You know, it's part of the experience. They may even associate it with the camping experience. And so they're much more willing to accept that. On the other hand, if it's this business of they're running in and out of the garden all day and they're going to have friends over for dinner in the evening, they really don't want to smell like DEET when those people come. Preference, of course, is part of it, and a lot of that is skin feel. And also a point that is probably kind of a hackneyed one for a lot of you, but those of you who haven't heard it, is that the application container can be very, very important, because mainly for convenience, but also because people don't want to get the material on the palms of their hands and then touch things with it. And that's something that the U.S. market has not been very sensitive to at all. But some foreign markets are very sensitive to that and make a lot of sticks and emphasize the towelettes. And of course, an aerosol accomplishes that as well. And then finally, availability. The repellent market is dissected into so many different products. I mean, there are the big ones like Off and Sawyer, which you can find more or less anywhere. But there's some really fine minor products out there that, like this REI 30, that you're just not going to find everywhere. And so it's no good to give a recommendation to buy something that the person can't get. So that's the excitement of the cost of repellents. But hopefully it's something you haven't heard about before. Thanks. Any questions?
We have about 5 to 6 minutes for questions. If you have any questions for Dr. Strickman,
it's a pretty scintillating subject, sort of like discussing underwear.
All the density data that you showed were all just
Well, obviously the bulk of them are aegypti, yeah. But some, like the Nomos, was Anopheles.
Okay.
Run.
You brought the data about the duration of protection for each of these products based on the label claims?
I did that on purpose. I know that, and actually we have done more realistic estimates. But I felt, frankly, there might be liability issues if I didn't take what was on the label.
How did you satisfy those
I think they're within a half hour, an hour. Yeah, I think, you know, you see that variation. I think that's fair. If a person, you know, obviously if a person's sweating or there's a lot of abrasion, you know, everything's out the window. On the other hand, a lot of those products, like the 25% DEET aerosol, if you put it on in a room like this and you're not sweating at all, many people, it's going to last 14 hours, you know, a very long time. So, yeah. Van? I guess you're outvoted, Van. Yeah.
Okay, so protection power you mentioned before, was that 5% protection or 50% protection?
Oh, great question, right. And how much time have I got?
Oh, you got 3 more minutes.
Got 3 minutes, okay. It's usually expressed with the implication that it's 100% protection. So that's the implication. The reality in the test, I think, in most cases, is 95% protection. But we'd all be, this is a real hobby horse of mine, we'd all be a lot better off if we aimed at 90% protection, because the accuracy of the comparisons would be much, much better if we talked about 90% protection. And the fact is, in the United States, most of the public would be quite happy with 90% protection, I think. It's a lot of personal opinion, but, yeah. Van?
Dr. Strickman, very, very intriguing look at these repellents. I appreciate it. And my question is, you mentioned IR-3535, a great product that may be underutilized. But that's in the United States, right, largely? And can you illuminate what is the percentage of use in Europe, for example, of IR-3535 compared to, and then
I don't know all those answers. I know DEET, the use of DEET has gone way, way down in Europe. I know that. And IR3535 was the principal active ingredient as of about 10 years ago. But I think somebody here may know better. I think PMD has actually outpaced it now.
In Europe.
In Europe, I believe so. But PMD, or IR3535 has been used about 25 years in Europe, a long time. Yes, sir?
Is its effect on mosquitoes have any impact on ticks?
It's another great question. In general, our standard active ingredients are less effective against ticks than against mosquitoes. But that said, IR3535 seems to outperform picaridin and DEET, for instance. And there was a poster just today about the tomato-based, it's not really tomato-based, it's derived originally from tomatoes, undecanone, that it was very efficient as a repellent against ticks. But when you say that, you got to remember that the assays against ticks are very, very different from the assays against mosquitoes. They're not done in a way to see how many of the ticks bite or don't bite. They're done in a way to see how many ticks pass a barrier. So that seems to have been quite a sensible way to bioassay and compare products, but you're not really asking the same question as you are when you do an arm in the cage trial or the other standard bioassays for mosquitoes.
Any other questions?
Okay, thanks so much for your patience.